Namaste, good morning, everyone. Before we begin taking questions, or if anyone would like to share anything, I wanted to touch upon a couple of points. One is a quotation by a famous French author. His name was André Gide. And he said, "Everything that had to be said has been said. But since no one was listening, it has to be said again." So this is pointing to the fact that wisdom teachings are ancient. They have always been around. But few are those who have been drawn to them. Few, yet fortunate. Since no one was listening, could be interpreted as most of us being lost in the mundane world, material things, transient things. And so these teachings come down through generations, always available, expressed in different ways for those who are graced to be drawn to the journey within. This journey within is far more important than it appears. This is a talk I hope to have sometime soon, which is about the theory of karma, Advaita, non-duality, the foundation of which the pivot is the concept of non-doership, and how the opportunity is provided by the source to some to help end the karma, so to speak. My spiritual guide didn't delve into the theory of karma, but I hope to bring an understanding, because especially in India, there is a large part of spiritual seekers who are aware of the theory of karma. And some who believe in it, but don't know the foundation and how it operates. So it would be a very interesting exploration for us to go through what the belief is in Hinduism about karma, and how such a beautiful teaching of Advaita, when it impacts our daily living, spontaneously and automatically brings about the reversal or the end of it. You see, according to this theory, there is a stockpile of karma, which is called as Sanchit karma, which is too much to exhaust in one lifetime. So that portion of Sanchit karma, which is allocated to this life, is referred to as Prarabdha karma. Something we have to face. And while facing this in this life, are we continuing to build karma, which is called as Kriyamani karma, day by day, which will add to our stockpile, or through understanding, divine intervention, grace, call it what you may, the opportunity has now been presented to end the unconscious addition to the stockpile of karma. So I will be deviating a bit from traditional Advaita, so we can explore this in a future talk. But I wanted to share with you the import of coming across a teaching which impacts our daily living, provides peace, a level of peace that we certainly didn't have prior to being exposed to this teaching. When we can feel that in our own lives, there has been a transformation, perhaps very gradual, little by little. Yet, it is noticeable, not just to me, but those I deal with. Then I know that something has changed deep within. Now, there are many people who write to me who have been attending talks on scriptures, be it Hinduism, Jainism, any religion. And they enjoy the talks. And they feel they have benefited from it. But the true benefit one has to ask oneself is, have I felt a deep peace within as a result of attending these talks, reading the scriptures, and so on? That to me is the only criteria. And it is a tricky thing, because I may feel that I have changed for the better, so to speak. But deep down, if I am still playing out the same patterns, still having strong identifications, still gossiping, still trying to get approval from others, and so on and so forth, then perhaps it is evident that the change has happened at a mental level and has not sunk into the heart. So one has to be honest with oneself. Where do I stand? And that is why the focus of these talks is only and only peace of mind. On another note, I look forward to meeting some of you all in Rishikesh in November. Spending 3 days together gives us the opportunity to dive deep into these teachings and come back with something, hopefully, of immense value, so that when we dive into daily living again, and especially our relationships, we see things from a fresh perspective. And the beauty of coming together for such events and retreats is that everyone has that one thing in common, the search for truth. That is what pulls people together. Where people's backgrounds, past conditioning become irrelevant, so to speak. Where we can let our guard down and be as we are to receive what we are meant to receive. Not as we think we should be, and as we think others should be. All right. So now, if anyone would like to share anything or ask something, you are welcome to. Before that, I just am reminded of a very beautiful saying which I heard here. I'm in Kashmir right now. And someone mentioned that their only hope is, in Hindi, she said, "जिस जिस से मैंने सीखा है, मैं उनकी इज्जत रखूं." Which would translate loosely as, "From all those whom I have learned from, may I keep their honor." And how would one keep that? When one knows that one is living the teachings, one is keeping that honor. It's quite a beautiful saying. All right. Yes, Harshada. Pranam.
I wanted to update about my father-in-law. His operation went smooth. He is back to daily routine as well, with a slow pace, but everything went smooth. That's all. Me and Mithul is also online right now, but he is from Goa. So as he finds peace externally over there and then internally, so he has taken some time out over there. And we will be joining your Tiruvannamalai retreat. So I'm excited for that. And means we were having issues, like our body was getting tired during those days of hospitals and going everything on that basis. But we were able to see that body is getting tired, mind is getting tired, but our peace or the self is there. It's like we were able to see it or distance it and then coming back to normal again. Since we had our shares of irritation and things, but it was like for a smaller period of time.
Yes.
Earlier, it used to be for longer, like 10 years back or 5 years back. It was for a longer period of time and then hurt and disappointment in a relationship. I guess just me and my partner in the house, and father-in-law was in the hospital. So no one else is there. So we both are only there, and mostly me doing and something hormonally. So I only used to get irritated on him. He is just silent and just nicely. He's very humble and sweet. So I only do. But then we patch up also like so nicely. And we used to talk also. And last, I guess last month, you kept the book for you clear your bookshelves, and we got the Silence of the Hearts. So he read means the book during those period of time, and he was like amazed. And if he wants to share his experience, he can do. But the book also, like we were talking about the book, like how we are choiceless, effortless, and pure consciousness. And we used to share with each other the something like whatever he reads or I read, like that. So it helped the teaching. And of course, listening to you is like, wow. It's like the teaching, living in the daily life. And now we have help as well for Papa. And it's going good. Otherwise.
Thank you. That's beautiful to hear that. There are places like hospitals. They are dense energy. There's so much illness, there's so much fear. All the people there, not only the patients, but those visiting their loved ones. See, everything is a vibration, as I keep saying. So it is but natural that the body feels tired or exhausted or fatigued because all these energies are playing out. But the teaching becomes the cushion, you see. As you rightly said, one could be aware that the body is feeling this. So that awareness, that one could say the screen of consciousness, is what is witnessing that this me, this body, is getting tired in this space. So that is not judged as well. It is just seen in the light of witnessing. And this is what takes one through the challenges in life. It is such a precious gift. Like you said, it's only in comparison. 5 years earlier, 10 years earlier, how would I have been versus how am I now? And this is not a quest to be the perfect, non-reactive human being. There's no such goal. This is rather to be as you are and just witness the flow of life, which, as we all know, is sometimes pleasure, many times pain. This cushion, I tell you, it is the most underestimated gift one can be given, because it is not seductive. Peace of mind is basically a lesser involvement in the drama of my life, a lesser involvement in my story, in my projections, in my identifications. So it tends to get missed. It is only when I know from my own experience that through a specifically challenging situation, I came out far better than I thought I would, then I know that deliverance has taken place. I will re-emphasize this point, the difference between awakening and deliverance. Awakening means I receive something. I'm awakened to a new way of looking at life, a new way of looking at things. One could say I have awakened from the dream I was lost in. Yet, I have to navigate through my life. I have to face what comes, prarabdha karma. Now, awakening means I've got the driving license, but I'm still scared of heavy traffic on the roads. I'm a new driver. I've just learned the art of driving. It's going to take time. So it does not mean getting the driving license means life becomes smooth. But by and by, I practice, I drive, I go through heavy traffic for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. And one day I'm driving to work and I think, my God, I really enjoyed this drive despite the heavy traffic. 3 years ago, I would have been really scared and nervous and fearful. This time I didn't feel it. Then I know deliverance has taken place. All right? Anything else you'd like to ask, or shall we move on?
No, I'm. Is this yeah, one more experience that everything was just in a flow. It was just we are acting it out, or we are just playing our roles. Everything was smoothly, gracefully supported, or the situation basically. So one or the other thing was falling into the place,
You
and
see,
could see that.
Harshada, yes, everything is always in the flow. It is we who come in between and try and interrupt the flow.
Yes, and we could see that, like we could be aware of the grace which is happening all the time,
Yes.
like that. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for sharing. All the best to all of you all and your father-in-law. Take care. Yes, Abhijit.
Namaste, Gautam Ji. Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Very happy to connect on this call. This is my first session that I'm joining.
Okay.
And I've come across your teachings. I've been following a lot of other teachers online as well. And I wanted to share and also ask you a question. From childhood, the question, who am I, has always been a running theme for me. I've always wanted to know who I am. And I think that on many levels, perhaps I tried to explore that through the conditioning I had. How I thought of the world was how my parents thought of the world, in one sense. They became my mental filters. And over a period of time, as life unfolded, there has been a lot of suffering, there has been a lot of pain, there's been a sparse of pleasure. So the duality of it has been something I've immersed myself in. What is wonderful is that the last few years, especially, the turn has taken to Advaita, where now I've begun to recognize, abide, and express the very awareness that is being spoken about so much, the consciousness that we are. And it has brought a lot of peace of mind on many levels, mentally, physically. And I think it's been going great. And where I sort of struggled was to reconcile what is described to be as Satchitanand in daily functioning. And that, I think that's where your teachings have become very helpful. Also in accepting past trauma, accepting people who've hurt me, to know the difference between forgiving and pardoning. And I think there's been so much to learn to accept. In the process of acceptance, I'm very grateful for that. Where one of the questions I had was to do with when you say behave according to my nature, essentially, you'd also talk about the relationship you have with yourself. For me, I feel like a child walking. I'm trying to better understand this from a pure consciousness perspective and then from the identified consciousness perspective, which we are also. So somewhere I'm not able to reconcile that, and I wanted to seek your support in reconciling the knowledge, in being able to further immerse in that piece that you talk about.
Sure. Thank you for giving me that background. And I think you are blessed that this inquiry of who am I has been spontaneous for you since childhood. It's truly a gift. You see, this is a very important point you raised, because let's not forget that Abhijit has to operate as the identified consciousness in daily living. Identified as a name and form. Now, behave according to your nature. Supposing Abhijit knows he's a mean person. By all standards, he is mean. Does this teaching mean that Abhijit should continue being mean? So, what is this teaching pointing to? Abhijit asks, why am I so mean? I am mean, is it probably out of fear that someone attacks me? And so on and so forth, the process of inquiry, asking questions. After all, who am I is a question. So, what we call purushartha, personal effort in this case. What is life about? What are my reactions about? Yes, I am the impersonal consciousness, pure awareness, but that pure awareness is expressing itself as an individual with likes and dislikes, with preferences, with a certain set of conditioning. Now, when this process of who am I is taken up in any form, it also implies who is the other. Who I consider apart from me. And by, when I see the hand of God behind everyone, behind everyone's behavior, including mine, I may find that the quality of meanness starts dissolving. That is the change. That is the change towards peace. You see, so we must not make this mistake of thinking that we have to function as impersonal, pure awareness. We are dealing with people in daily living, with events in daily living. and with ourselves. We have to operate as the identified consciousness, but we find when we understand the concept of non-doership, and when the thorn of doership has been pulled out, the thorn that was embedded in our foot, we find it simpler to walk through the journey of life. When we are no longer so focused on me and my story, when we are no longer identified with polaric opposites, then the grip the ego, the identified consciousness had earlier is not operating anymore. It is freed of that. Yet I operate as an individual. This must be reconciled. Otherwise, there can be a disassociation and a disconnect. It is a very important point. As long as I have seen through Advaita, which you say you have been drawn to, not to, appears as to, not to. So someone, as I constantly say, who has been pushing my buttons all the time, stands in front of me, and now I see that they are playing out their script, their blueprint, based on their conditioning which God made. I no longer take it personally. When I no longer take it personally like I used to, you could say that the sense of personhood has reduced. But the reduction of that sense of personhood does not mean now I'm just pure awareness. I have to operate. If I find I have to respond, I respond. Earlier, it would be a knee-jerk reaction, reactivity, unconscious reactivity based on my conditioning and my patterns. Now the space has been created. The other person is witnessed doing their numbers, so to speak. And now, because that wedge of awareness has been placed between what has happened and my reaction to it, I find that I am more and more responding to life rather than reacting to it. Yet, I will respond as an individual. But an individual who is at peace, the peace that passeth or surpasseth understanding, not a mental peace anymore, peace in the heart. Does that help clarify this in any way, or would you like to take this further in terms of asking more questions?
Yes, please. So I think that when you mentioned that there is a wedge now between what happens to you and now your response to it. So essentially over there, perhaps my conditioning would bring about certain preferences as to how I would want to react. And on the other hand, with this knowledge that we get through Advaita, there is perhaps the option of making a decision, a choice that comes in for us to whether perhaps react or go by the preferences that we are conditioned to be like, or perhaps in alignment with the truth that we are all one non-dual being, and then to respond basis our conditioning. And I think where I kind of get a little stuck is with the decision making, because while I recognize that ultimately there is no doer, because everything has, it's all put into place. Where I kind of then get a little stuck is with the actual decision making itself. And then I start questioning those decisions. And there comes a point when I try to become aware of this whole confusion that is happening. But in day-to-day life, the challenge I face is that the pace at which things go at work, or the pace at which things happen about in day-to-day relationships, I understand the teaching is taking its time to kind of go into the heart, so to speak. And I also understand I cannot rush through the process. But I want to try understand how I needn't be so hard on myself in allowing the process to to churn in because I've been conditioned to be hard on myself.
Yes.
So I want to try, be kind to myself, but also know that this kindness is not and not necessarily me running away from responsibility, but the kindness that comes from knowledge that all feelings are accepted, maybe all behaviors are not from that
Yes.
space. So I wanted to.
Yes. See, Abhijit, what you are describing is itself too much doership.
Okay.
You don't have to struggle to take decisions based on the new understanding. Allow it to happen itself. You don't have to manipulate this, do it a certain way, give the right reaction. Allow the teaching to do its work. Now, for example, you go into a shop to buy a shirt. You have money for one. And you see a yellow shirt and a blue shirt. And you know you have a preference for one of the two. If you are confused, you take some time and decide which of the two to buy. Or if you're very confused, you leave without buying anything. But it's not a problem, right?
No.
The problem comes when we are dealing with people. So this trying to second guess ourselves is what is going to add to the problem. A teaching comes in which says no one is the doer of their actions. We have to allow that understanding to do the job. We don't have to step in and try and figure it out, figure out what to say, what to do. We have to allow that to happen. You see, the ego loves to dominate and control. And in doing so, it's perpetuating its identity. It is the ego coming in through the back door. When something has appealed to us, we have to allow that to operate. We have to step aside as the individual with the sense of doership. What is happening in the case you have described? Earnestness for sure. The intention is there that I want this new teaching now to filter and operate my whole life. But for that, Abhijit needs to get out of the way. Now, how will Abhijit get out of the way? This may sound like a big contradiction. You're telling me on one end, put in the effort, and then you're telling me to get out of the way. There is no contradiction. Abhijit is not being asked to step out of the way, but the sense of doership is being exposed in this instance. So be as you are, precisely the way God made you, is fine. But when this starts revealing itself, nobody is the doer of their actions, I will find my reactions themselves start changing spontaneously. It starts happening. I may find irritation arises one day with a particular person. Teaching kicks in. Next emotion is compassion. I may see that this person must be themselves suffering to have said what they said to me. So everything starts getting revealed itself. So therefore, you are quite right. How will you be kind to yourself? By allowing whatever has to surface, even if you are put off by someone or irritated by someone while you are on your spiritual journey, so what? So much of old conditioning is being dealt with. Years and years and years of it, it's going to take time. So indeed, be gentle on yourself. Don't judge yourself too harshly. Don't judge others too harshly. All this will happen by and by on its own. The fact is, the question, who am I, was not asked by you in the first instance. It arose in your childhood years. So allow that force to take you through this process. Now it has brought you to Advaita. You yourself say you're feeling more at peace. So don't get stuck in the mechanism. Don't get stuck in analyzing and figuring this out That's the left brain activity of the ego. Always dissecting, analyzing, you know, saying, let me be this way, let me be that. Let the creative brain, the right brain, start functioning. We have been left brain dominated, especially those drawn to Advaita, because it is the path of knowledge, the path of gyan. They find this. So this is an invitation to bring balance of the polarities, the left and right brain. Don't try to figure too much of it out, because that can take away your peace. Let it flow. When questions arise, let them arise. That is the journey of inquiry, right? Questions, question mark. So be it. Let the answer be, so be it. Any thoughts which come, questions arise, and that will start revealing itself to you. If there are any specific instances or examples you'd like to discuss where we can see this in operation, we can go through that. Otherwise, if there's anything else you'd like to ask, you're welcome to.
I'll probably try to give an example. That's it. So let's say with work, for instance, I would want to see what I want to do for the next couple of years, how I want to pace out my career. So in such a situation is where these thoughts come about, you know, what you're doing is not in alignment with who we are, that those kind of thoughts come about. And
but can I interrupt you here? How is it not in alignment with who you are?
Exactly. So I don't have the answer for it. So I allow it to be there. I don't reject it. I don't answer it. But that question keeps hitting me, and it keeps draining away some of that, a lot of the peace that I have.
No, so but why would you feel that your work is not in alignment with who you are? I'm not understanding that part.
So I think that perhaps because a lot of the work that I do, so I work in marketing, and essentially a part of me keeps telling me that I should pursue my passion for music, because I've been trained in music as well. So, you know, perhaps it's that part of me that says you are in the wrong job. You should be doing more with music. That's where your calling is, you know. And it's getting to a point where it's a lot of thoughts going into one another, and concepts getting blurred over there. And there it gets difficult for me to kind of act, because I am not able to then differentiate between what is put into me by our conditioning, and then I'm coming in my way. I can see that for sure. So I want to try not come in my way.
Well, Abhijit, it's all very relative. Imagine you tell someone who has no job that I'm wondering whether to be in marketing and earn a living or pursue my passion. They'll think you're crazy. They'll say, if you are in a job which is paying you money, please stay with it, because you don't know what it is like to be without a job. You see how relative it is? Yes, it is ideal to be passionate about one's work and to earn money from it. Few have been destined for that. Now, for example, I'm a lawyer and I have a flourishing practice. It is my passion and I'm earning money. But it is not so with everyone. So Abhijit has to decide, rather than judge the marketing, that do I need this job to sustain myself? And if the answer clearly is yes, I stop complaining. Or do I have enough savings? Do my parents have money where I feel I can drop this job and pursue my passion of music, where I may or may not make money? This Abhijit has to decide for himself. All actions will have consequences. Abhijit may give up his job, pursue music, but may not see any success in music. But yet he is happy because it's his passion. So be it. So, of course, in daily living, the working mind has to analyze, figure out the various scenarios, and take decisions. That is the quality and function of the working mind. But the problem is, when Abhijit wants to guarantee outcomes, and no outcomes are guaranteed. That life has already shown us. Effort is ours, decisions are ours, so to speak. Results have never been in our control. So it's a very relative situation. And at your age, everyone goes through what you are going through. The passion is one thing, work is something else. I always believe in the middle path. That has been my nature, nothing extreme. Let destiny play itself out the way it is meant to. Things unfold over time. And if I find I'm in a zone of doubt, that is when I don't take a decision. I allow things to play themselves out.
I may ask here, the destiny that you refer to, is that the prarabdha karma that you talk about, the stockpile with which we come into manifestation?
It could be seen in one way, but I also refer to destiny as what is in the moment.
In the moment. Okay.
Yes, what is in the moment, where our feet are right now.
Okay.
We hope they will be somewhere else, but from where we are, we take an objective look at things. All right.
Thank you so much, sir.
Feel free to attend these talks and ask more questions.
For sure. But thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Yes, we have Harshada 2. I think we did a Harshada 1, so my team has marked it as Harshada 2, I suppose. Or Harshada, have you? Just so I don't make a mistake. Everyone is so kind.
Gautam sir.
Namaste.
Sir, my question is, first of all, I'm deeply in gratitude for your talks and teaching. Thank you so very much. Sir, question is, if input and output is already predestined, then how free will operates here and the person of understanding will how he or she will use that free will in daily living?
All right. Input and output may be predestined, but even the person of understanding doesn't know what the outcome is. So the person of understanding will do precisely that which they think and feel they should do, knowing the outcome is not in their control. They will not try to change themselves or feel, oh, what is the point of this all if everything is predetermined? So also, is their action. In fact, the person of understanding is freed from this load. They will give themselves 100% to the task, knowing that the input and output is not in their control. Therefore, they live without any guilt and shame should the outcome not be in their favor, and they live without pride and arrogance should the outcome be in their favor. Absence of pride and arrogance and guilt and shame means peace of mind. That is the difference. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Input and output. It is exactly that. We've received input from the day we were born. Bombardment of conditioning. Non-stop, and we vomit out the output without realizing that all that we are speaking and doing is by and large unconscious, based on events that happened to us, which shaped us and made us who we are. The only downside of this is that somewhere along the way, through the process of divine hypnosis, not our doing as such, we assumed ourselves to be the doers of our actions as well as others, and we started losing our peace of mind. And then something touches us, reawakens that quotient of peace, which we had known. because peace is our nature. The child is spontaneously at peace. We lost this childlike quality in the process of growing up. Now we start rediscovering it. You see, because otherwise one can continue living one's life in unawareness, of course, if that is one's destiny. But the gift of the spiritual seeking is so tremendous that it opens up this Pandora's box and we start questioning all our views, opinions, judgments, and beliefs. What are they based on? Thin air. Everything gets exposed in this journey. All the identifications of the ego. Because I truly know, the fact is, I am most at peace in deep sleep, which is the absence of me and my story. Where did it go? In the waking state, where did that go? Troubled by thoughts and involved in those thoughts in the duration of time, causing excessive thinking about how to protect myself, defend myself from others, from their views, their opinions. This is me, this is who I am. Building wall upon wall upon wall of separation. To protect what? Who is the one building the walls? Is there a need to build the wall when one is in deep sleep? There's no sense of separation. So this journey is the death of that one who has built walls separating itself from others and separating itself from what happens in life and separating itself from God. This is the end of separation, when this compulsive need to build wall after wall after wall starts dropping away. As my teacher would say, next time someone hurts me, the understanding is there that it was my destiny to be hurt, and through whom it happens is irrelevant. So the focus on the other, this obsessive, compulsive need the ego has to pin the blame on the other, starts dropping away by itself. You know, there's the, you know, tradition of healing, a very high form of healing. Part of the training is that if any negativity is coming your way, have the full understanding that the negativity is being directed at God, which means the healer is not taking delivery of the negativity as a person. This is part of the training which provides protection to the healer, which also obviously implies that the healer is just an instrument through whom the healing is happening. That too, it is not an individual being healed. You see, so when we stop getting obsessed with individuals in our lives and see the hand of consciousness, the hand of God behind the whole play, that is what one could say, as Abhijit was referring to, the impersonal consciousness at play through identified consciousness. Identified with separate names and forms as entities in our lives. Parent, sibling, friend, colleague, stranger on the road, and so on. Yet, I have to deal with individuals. All right. Yes, Ganesh.
Pranam Guruji.
No.
I just want to ask you, first of all, I just want to share you one thing. Whenever I interact with my colleagues, I say only one thing. My Guruji says that no person is good or bad. Everyone will act according to their conditioning. No one is doer of their actions. Some of my colleagues have actually started following you, and they had a profound impact on their lives, especially when they are dealing with stress and all. So one of that colleague have asked raised this question to for me to ask you, how to control the chatter, the constant self-sabotaging, criticizing chatter that will happen in our minds?
Well, Ganesh, firstly, I hope your other colleagues don't think you're crazy. There's no need to control that chatter. That chatter has to be exposed and be seen for what it is, as simply chatter. When it is exposed as simply chatter, that chatter will start reducing on its own. You see why? Very important and very interesting. Thank you for raising this point. A very simple simile is given. You have a guest, you have two guests who visit you at home. One you adore and love and you focus on all the time. That guest is going to keep staying. The other one you ignore is going to leave. So earlier we have been obsessed with this chatter. Why is this chatter there? Why should it be there? I want to reduce it. You are focusing on it. It's going to stay. You are telling this guest, please stay because my focus and spotlight is on you. When it is left to its own devices, when it is seen it is chatter, let it play out its course, it is going to leave. As simple as that. It is truly the path of non-doership. The ego trying to do something to reduce the chatter is the problem, not the chatter. The ego which says this chatter should not be there. That is the problem. Of course, who wants chatter? That is very clear. The preference is not to have chatter. But the ego wants to step in and now try to control that this chatter be reduced, and how should I reduce it? What should I do? Blah, blah, blah. And that becomes the chatter, layer upon layer of chatter. When chatter is seen as chatter, it will lose its grip on the mind. You see, when I start accepting the teachings of Advaita, not just through this stream, any stream, the chatter is nothing but the thinking mind. The thinking mind is nothing but the ego with its sense of doership that is bound to reduce on its own. The only thing is, earlier you were unaware of the chatter, now you're aware of the chatter. Many people are unaware of the chatter in their minds because they are playing out their lives through that chatter. For example, you walk down a street. You're lost in your mind while you're walking down the street. You don't even notice half the things. You don't notice the trees, the cars which are parked, whatever street you may be down, because the mind is absorbed in the chatter. When the chatter loses its significance, oh, these thoughts are based on what? Doership? Me trying to form opinions, judgments, and so on? That starts dissolving. And my thinking mind, when it is reduced, I am more available and open as presence as I walk down the same street. So trying to control the chatter itself is too much chatter. The chatter is bound to reduce on its own when I give up the need to control and dominate others through my views and opinions and so on and so forth. It will happen on its own. All right. I really thank everyone for asking these questions because they are everybody's questions. Everyone faces all these situations in their lives. And I really appreciate that you all come forth on this platform of sharing, because obviously you all are not living close to me, so you all can come home for the home talks and benefit not just others who are watching this on Zoom, but on YouTube as well. And wherever it is meant to go, it goes. Yes, Tripura.
So I had a question. So many times in our my day-to-day living, I'm able to see it in light of not being the doer, or God is controlling everything. But then there are triggers that take me down memory lane. There is a past experience that shows up. And then I'm surprised at my own reaction to that situation, because it's being played out by the past hurt or past happiness. So it is something from the deep down memory, which is not in your conscious mind all the time. But there is a trigger that happens. Maybe somebody said something, or you see something, and it just takes you down, that your awareness goes to that memory, and that starts playing out in your living in that moment. How do you get over that?
You don't. The fact that you have seen that it is this past memory which has resurfaced and which has led to your reaction clearly means you had no volition over it. It arose. You see how humbling this thought is? That I may try my best, but I tend to slip up, so to speak. That is when I'm judging myself. Now the awareness is there that I've tried so hard, yet this memory springs up from somewhere, makes me say something or do something which I didn't intend to based on my new conditioning. It happened. So one has to be kinder on oneself and gentler on oneself when that happens. Most of us are operating from only memory all the time. No divine intervention has taken place in this lifetime, in daily living, which has even created the shift which you are seeing. You are fortunate that it's only in some instances the past memory is coming up. You have to consider your glass half full and not half empty. Of course, it is ideal that even that does not happen, but leave it to the source, which created those memories in the first place and which buried them deep down. You see, in meditation, for example, if someone has a sadhana of meditation, a lot of things surface from the unconscious. Forget events which happened in this life. Things which don't make sense come up. You can't fathom how this kind of thought could come up. That is past memory. The only thing is to allow and release it. Let it be. Otherwise, if I hold on to this memory and I want to wish it away, it is not going to go away. It has to be seen for what it is without judging the memory itself and myself. And you already have that awareness which has recognized that the memory arose which led to saying and doing a certain action. Now, supposing based on that memory, I said something that I didn't mean to, which I would not have said today if something happened, I allow myself the opportunity to express regret. If I feel...
Yes. That I've started doing.
I allow that. At the same time, I don't feel guilt and shame for what happened, not my action. You see, now whether the other person accepts my apology or not is not my concern. You see, we want to force others to react a certain way to us. That is again creating trouble for ourselves ultimately. So everything is an allowing Tripura. It's a allowing without judging, what we call witnessing. The it should not have arisen, why did it arise, is an endless game. It is what it is. I wish it was not there, especially in the light of who I am now, which is so beautiful compared to earlier. It would be ideal none of this arises, of course, yet it did. Lifetimes of conditioning, doership, burdens being carried forth on and on in an action-reaction loop, endlessly. We keep reincarnating into this action-reaction loop, or in this life with all our relationships. And when the concept of non-doership is lived, it is the end to that action-reaction loop. That is what I started out by saying, the end of karma, so to speak. My teacher would say, karma purely means action, not my action. It's a very deep statement, not easy to understand. Because if I am not the doer, how can it be my action? But that has to be understood. If I am not the doer, nor is the other. What a beautiful journey of discovery this is. I would like to mention this because I get mails where people are following certain teachings, teachers, and are going into depression, feeling life is not worth living, everything is losing its luster. No. Maybe you are reinterpreting what is of value to you now as compared to earlier. That is fine. The mundane is losing its luster, maybe, fine. But that spark, that discovery of peace, must be felt. Ah, I feel I have come home, or I feel I'm getting there. Something to look forward to. When I look forward to something, because I have tasted it now, then I know I'm on the right path. That is the difference. It is not something to be upset about, morose about, life is so meaningless, why am I into all this if nothing has value? That is only part of the recalibration. If I'm sinking deep into it, something is wrong. Luckily for me, by and by, I felt just more and more peace in daily living. I didn't go through this questioning process. And the mundane world itself lost its grip on me without me having to do anything. Yet I enjoy my time in the mundane world when I have to. Why not? Buy a nice shirt, go for a nice meal somewhere, whatever maybe one's thing, you could say, without being attached to it. Here today, gone tomorrow. It is truly a beautiful journey, and therefore, I say we should smile more. Really. All right. I think we'll take a question or two more and then end the session. Yes, Dipti.
Hi, Gautam. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
So I just have a question regarding this non-judgment, right? So it's been, I mean, it's very hard for me to be totally non-judgmental because I feel it's very, if I don't have a bit of judgment about the other person or the people around me, it's going to ultimately hurt me, or it's going to be difficult, or people might walk over me. So
sure.
Ultimately, to protect myself, I think I definitely do a bit of judgment, at least in the, it's not that I hate a person, because I think, but in this teaching, you always talk about being totally non-judgmental, right? So is it, can this both go together? Can this happen? I mean,
absolutely, absolutely. Good point. See, I have to judge as a mechanism in daily living. Now, for example, let me give an example. Let's say I'm an employer and I'm interviewing two candidates for the same job. I will have to decide which one of the two to take. I have to use my discretion, my experience, and therefore pass a judgment, so to speak, that will I benefit more from this candidate or this candidate. But this judgment is part of the mechanism taking me forward in daily living. It is not a judgment on the person as being the doer of the action. It is a judgment on the person's capabilities. Do they fit my profile? Will they be beneficial to the organization? The judgment referred to in Advaita when we are pointing it out is that we judge people to be the doers of their actions, and then we hate them or we malign them or have ill will towards them. That is the judgment we are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if I have two people in my life and I feel one is toxic, I'd rather not be in that space if I'm not allowed to express myself or whatever it may be, I have to exercise that judgment as part of the mechanism of daily living. But mm-hmm. at the same time, I don't hate that person. I have no idea what made this person the way they are. I don't want to get into that story also, but the awareness is there. I don't know what demons they are dealing with. They are bringing it out on me. I have to protect myself. That's different. Because okay. I have not judged them anymore as individuals. You see, that is a big difference.
Yes,
so these are two different aspects.
Okay.
It doesn't mean I don't judge them and then no matter what their behavior is to me, I accept it all.
Yeah.
It's not a teaching which says be walked on by everyone. You have to utilize your buddhi, right?
Yes.
But what we normally do is in exercising that intellect, our mind is full of hatred and malice and ill will and spite and all such qualities.
Mm-hmm.
This is removed by the teaching of Advaita. The person is seen as they are, as God made them, and yet I have to take a decision. So my thinking mind is no longer lost in sticking labels on these people who have troubled me or may trouble me. That part is completely gone. And I'm vacant, available, and open.
Okay, yeah.
Is that clear?
I think I understand it better now. Yeah. I was like, it's too much of confusion. I was like, how does this happen? At least for me, it doesn't happen. I couldn't work on it.
So. Sure. I hope that clarifies it. And if you need more clarification next time, we can discuss it further.
Sure. Thanks, Gautam.
Thank you. Yes, Artha.
Namaste, Gautam ji.
Namaste.
I love I. I just wanted to share something. I don't really have any questions, just a quick one. So talking about what, I think this is something that you talked about in the talk. There was this one day, I don't know, like back in the past where I just like opened the door one day, right? I was living in a place, opened the door and I was going for my walk. And then suddenly this thought like came upon me, like, and the thought was, I don't know what's going to happen next, but I really want to find out. And that was the end of that thought. And it's been stuck with me ever since. I do have a question, but I don't have a question for myself. I wanted to ask a question on behalf of my mother. She's not really comfortable with this sort of technology.
Sure.
So she had a very serious surgery a few years back, one that has kind of left her a bit weak and debilitated physically. And many times what happens is when she goes out in, like social situations, she finds herself being accosted by people constantly commenting on her physical appearance. Like she has like become a little weak and feeble, although she doesn't necessarily feel like that all the time. And I find that sometimes when people bring that up, it kind of makes her second guess herself, you know, although she's feeling fine, but she starts second guessing herself. Now, I've also, of course, given her my 2 cents on it, for whatever that's worth. But I wanted to know your thoughts on that and how to deal with, because you know what happens is then you start like going into a shell, you know, like cloistering yourself.
Of course.
You go out and, you know, interact and mingle with people because you know that. But you know what the funny thing is? The funny thing is every time it's the same question, almost as if like the social mechanism is at play here and it's really nothing organic. It's so artificial and it's so almost like illusory, because every time like she goes, it's like a spontaneous response from the other side, as if they were like programmed by some societal mechanism. Somebody just pushed a button and it's the same thing, the same repetition again and again and again.
Yes, so, yes. No, Sarthak, I'm very aware of this. I'm very aware of this. And, you know, interestingly, 20 years ago, I had done a Tibetan course which was about being so mindful about the words we use, because people take them to heart. And someone who's been through an illness already knows that they've lost weight and they're looking weak because they feel it compared to their earlier version. They don't really need to be told that by others. But because we are unconscious human beings and social creatures, we tend to do that. Oh, you're looking so weak. What has happened to you? We feel that we have the best of intentions for that person. That's why we are saying it. But you see what is going on into the consciousness of that person who is at the receiving end? That consciousness is being made to feel more deliberated. This is what happens when we are unaware. Now I'm talking of the others who are projecting all these thoughts, seeing the physical form of a person and passing judgment. Oh, poor you. Human beings love to see others down. This is a fact. The ego loves it. Whether you've lost money in the stock market, whether you've lost weight and you're going through an illness, oh, and I feel so, oh, poor you. This mechanism is such a social mechanism and we all play a part of it. We have to be very mindful of this, because someone who is already down will go down further. The whole science of affirmations is based on a reversal of this. That is a different story. We won't get into that. Now, what does such a person do when they are constantly at the receiving end of this, if they go to social circles where they are told this all the time? It is very hard. My suggestion would be that if you are able to cope with not going, don't go. If you are dependent on going, be mindful of only one fact. People are playing out their own script. People can't help being who they are, and don't take it personally to heart. Very hard, because if I am sick, I will take it to heart. It is a very difficult step to master, and this is really walking the talk. If I can go, if I feel the need to continue going in such social circles where I know this is what will come to me constantly, do I have the wherewithal to stand my ground and in one ear and out the other? That can only happen when I see people are just playing out blindly their script and I don't really take delivery of it. Then it can become a sadhana. To go to such places and see, am I really affected by it or not, can become a sadhana. But do I advise subjecting oneself to it? Certainly not. So this is a decision she will have to take. Am I socially dependent myself or going out of formality to such situations? Then maybe I should reduce it. That way I keep my peace of mind, focus on my health, and I don't need additional input about how tired or weak or fatigued I'm looking. Do I accept it in my stride, walk both worlds, so to speak, and yet maintain my equilibrium and peace of mind? And there are ways, you see. Imagine telling someone, just to give you an example, oh, you're looking so weak and tired, you've lost weight. And oh, I could turn that around. I meet someone, I see that they are looking weak and have lost weight. And I say, hey, you look much nicer with a couple of kilos on. And the way I say it, you see, again, I'm so grateful to this practice in Tibet which they had, because they were very clear that the face of a person revealed much more than what they spoke. Because speech is based on conditioning. So when I receive people into my consciousness, what I mean by that is when I see people in a room, at work, how am I receiving them? As an aspect of consciousness, or out to point a finger and pass a judgment on how they are looking? This is serious sadhana if one wants to do sadhana. But we can get into that another time. But Sarthak, really, my heart goes out to your mom because I know this. I know how it feels. And it's like a trap because you see, you get more and more identified with the way you are looking. But it is teachings like the teaching of Advaita, which you obviously are immersed in also, which will give her this cushion of understanding the dynamics, especially the social dynamic in this case. And maybe when she sees who she truly is and sees how others truly are, it will make the mood lighter when this is said. All right?
Well, she's doing that for sure. But yeah, whenever she feels a weird thought or a feeling creep up, she comes to me and she's back into that. Yeah.
All right. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you, Gautam.
All right. We'll just sit together for a couple of minutes. If I can see everyone, that would be great. I must have mentioned this before in Srinagar, one of the Sufi mystics I'm with. You see, every time he comes across someone new, he asks himself, let me first find one good quality I can in this person in front of me. It just takes away and dissolves the focus the ego has on putting people down and finding faults with others. Because finding faults with others is finding faults with God. We are on fault-finding missions. Thank you.